The Drama of Cosmic Enlightenment by Sangharakshita. Parables, Myths and Symbols of the White Lotus Sutra. Published by Wintour's Publications, 1993. Read by Subhadra. Editor's Preface. In cultures throughout the world, the figure of the storyteller, encircled by a crowd eager to know what will happen next, is central and vital. In stories and tales, myths and legends, a culture recognizes itself and identifies its needs and its ideals. On an individual level too, through these narratives, we recognize the deep and inchoate stirrings within our own hearts. Our strongest memories of stories may be associated with childhood, but the hold of storytelling on our hearts did not really leave us when we grew up. It took on new guises. In our culture, scientists and the manipulators of the media may appear to be the purveyors of truth, but it is still to stories, films, novels, even computer games, that we turn for a more satisfying version of reality. Stories have the power to cut through our mental chatter and hold us spellbound, strangely attentive to the fate of imaginary or long-dead characters. And when we emerge from the compelling world of the imagination, in some mysterious way we seem able to make more sense of the ordinary world that we experience day to day. At the beginning of the White Lotus Sutra, we meet the Buddha as a storyteller, surrounded by a great crowd of disciples, monks and nuns, laymen and laywomen, not to mention a vast assembly of non-human beings. The Buddha chooses to start telling stories to his audience because conceptual explanation has failed to convince all its members. Indeed, it has thrown them into utter confusion. The Buddha has simply pointed out that, despite all their spiritual attainments, they do not yet know everything. They have something more to learn. The very idea sends shock waves through the entire assembly. 5,000 disciples, unable to believe their ears, get up and walk out, and those who do stay behind are bewildered. What more can they have to learn, profoundly versed in the Dharma as they are? What can the Buddha mean? The Buddha was perhaps expecting this, remarking that through a parable intelligent people reach understanding. He launches into a story that will explain matters. This one parable is quite enough to convince some people, and as more and more parables are told, more and more disciples do at last grasp what the Buddha has been talking about. They rejoice, they tell parables of their own, expressing their gratitude. They shower the Buddha with double handfuls of jewel flowers, and, most importantly, they commit themselves to his new teaching. We ourselves are living at a time when it is hard to avoid feeling that we know it all. We may even feel that we know too much, and at the same time that we are not really certain of anything. Bombarded with information as we are, what we really need, we may feel, is not more teaching, but more understanding. In our overstimulated state, it may come as quite a relief to listen to stories such as those the Buddha tells in the White Lotus Sutra, and take them into our hearts. Allowing ourselves just to sit and listen is by no means just a childish distraction. Listening, receptivity, willingness to learn, open-heartedness, is, according to Buddhism, the first level of wisdom. At the same time, such simple fare may not be intellectually satisfying. We may feel the need for some kind of interpretation to chew over. This need is not unique to our own time and culture. Throughout the long history of the White Lotus Sutra, which was first written down in the 1st century CE, after many years of being passed on by word of mouth, responses to the text have alternated between the expositional and the devotional, according to the mood of the time. Some people, like the great Zen master Hakuin, though he did change his mind later, have found the sutra disappointing. No doctrines, no teachings, just a lot of old stories. Other people have gone to the opposite extreme and made the chanting of the praises of the sutra their sole spiritual practice. When the White Lotus Sutra was flourishing in China, many of the sutra's adherents took a doctrinal approach. Monks would give a series of lectures on the text, 8 being the usual number, and after each lecture, scholars from rival Buddhist schools would interrogate the speaker, trying to find a flaw in his arguments. A judge would decide the winner of the contest. At other times, the emphasis has been on the reverential decoration and adornment of the text. It was copied in gold and silver leaf on the best dark blue paper. It was embellished with stupas and lotuses and mantras. The best-known stories became the subject of lavish illustrations. The seeds of both the expositional and the devotional approach to this text are sown in the sutra itself, which frequently exhorts its hearers to expound it, recite it, copy it, and pay homage to it. This book represents a drawing together of the strands of tradition associated with the White Lotus Sutra. It is in fact based on a series of 8 lectures given not in the sutra's heyday in China, but in the heyday of the hippie culture in London in 1970 by the Venerable Sangharakshita. At the time, Sangharakshita had been back in England for only a few years after 20 years spent in India. Having known that he was a Buddhist since the age of 16, at which time he was still living within his native London, he had taken the opportunity to remain in India at the close of the Second World War and had been ordained as a Buddhist monk in the Theravada tradition at Kushinagara, the place of the Buddha's death. Since then, he had received teachings from Buddhist teachers of many different traditions and had established his own vihara near the Himalayan town of Kalimpong. It was a return visit to England in 1964 which made him realise the need for authentic Buddhist teaching in the West, and this led him to found the Western Buddhist Order in 1968. At the time he gave these lectures, Sangharakshita was thus the focus of a growing Buddhist movement. The audience, which crowded into a London hall to hear him speak on the theme, was typical of its time, long-haired and brightly dressed. The atmosphere may have been redolent with exotic and sometimes proscribed fragrances, but it was enthusiastic and energetic. In the first lecture, Sangharakshita made the point that Buddhism, Mahayana Buddhism at least, always speaks the language of its audience, not just literally, but metaphorically. He then proceeded to expound the White Lotus Sutra in the language of the audience now eyeing him from behind its long hair. Sangharakshita's hair, incidentally, was just as long, dropping in occasional references to Zen, Yin and Yang, psychotherapy, and other popular subjects of the day. Thus was the assembly drawn into the strange atmosphere of the sutra, whose genre Sangharakshita described as transcendental science fiction, and regaled with a lively retelling of its parables. Once again, the drama of cosmic enlightenment was holding its audience spellbound. 15 years later, in the course of a seminar held at Padmaloka, a retreat centre in Norfolk, the ancient custom of interrogating the speaker was revived, even though the questioners may have had no idea that they were the upholders of such a lineage and were not representatives of different Buddhist groups. On this occasion, the interrogation came from a group of Sangharakshita's own students who had questions to ask, both for the benefit of their own Dharma practice and in preparation for leading study on the sutra themselves. In one of the lectures, Sangharakshita refers to the kind of spiritual aspirant who demands, as a matter of good religious form, "Tell me how I can become enlightened right now if possible," but who has no intention of putting any advice proffered into practice. On the occasion of this seminar, however, the questioners meant business. Although some of the questions were doctrinal, many were of a practical nature. Is psychotherapy useful to spiritual practice? How can we overcome the fear of change? How do we encourage the urge to enlightenment to become our dominant motivation? What is the best way of studying non-conceptual texts like the White Lotus Sutra? In this book, these questions and answers are interwoven with the lectures, complementing them, adding perspective and depth to the pictures they paint. At times, the discussion becomes quite technical, and it ranges over a broad range of topics. Where appropriate, I have added footnotes giving brief explanations of technical terms, or suggesting sources of further information. The more decorative, devotional approach is echoed in Varaprabha's illustrations, which combine the comparatively modern lino-cut technique with the inspiration of the exquisite illustrations of the sutra produced hundreds of years ago in China and Japan. Of course, although this book may represent the inheritance of ancient traditions, it is also the product of more modern, even technological spheres of Buddhist activity. Recordings of Sangharakshita's original lectures were provided by Dharmachakra tapes. The questions and answers were transcribed by the transcriptions unit, headed by Dharmachari Shilabhadra. Together, these are the guardians of this particular oral tradition. It is the effort of those involved in both which has made available the raw material for this book, and potentially many more. Thanks are also due to the many people who have worked on the drama of cosmic enlightenment, perpetuating the tradition of protecting, keeping, reading, reciting, and preaching the White Lotus Sutra. Although reading is usually a solitary activity these days, perhaps we can imagine, as we begin to read, that we are part of the vast audience that has gathered to hear the White Lotus Sutra in many ages and many cultures. To enter the world of the White Lotus Sutra is, as Sangharakshita warns us in his introduction to the text, to enter a very strange and mysterious world indeed. As we do so, his advice is that we should just sit back and allow the sutra to have its effect on us. We cannot infer from this that we can afford to be armchair Buddhists, but we can have confidence that the starting point of spiritual practice is receptivity. The sutra is the White Lotus Sutra of the Real Truth, and if we allow it to unfold before us, untold miracles will occur. Of course, the best miracle, the only real miracle, is, as the Buddha once said, the commitment of an individual to the path of spiritual transformation. Karen Stout, Norwich, March 1993, abridged.